Chapter 12. Saturday, 4:41 p.m.
Burroughs hung up his phone. Dad confirmed it. He gave Ashley the watch for her birthday last year. Said she never took it off. Lucy nodded, still trying to absorb the new information. "Call me when you have any results," she told the M.E., and turned to Burroughs and Delmar. "I'm going to talk with our witness."
"You know her name?"
"Doris. Doris Sykes."
She left the men outside and returned to the break room, relieving the uniformed officer. Scooting the second chair beside Doris's, she sat down and took the girl's hand in hers. Doris's shoulder shook with the silent sobs, but after a few moments, she looked up.
"Doris?
My name is Lucy Guardino. I'm with the FBI.
Can you tell me what happened today?"
Tears still streaming down her face, Doris nodded silently. Her eye makeup was clumped into pockets of baby blue and black, threatening to topple from over-mascaraed lashes with each blink. She sniffed and took the tissue Lucy handed her, blowing her nose.
"How old are you, Doris?"
Lucy began when the girl didn't speak.
18.
18. Good. Doris kept nodding, so Lucy bobbed her head as well.
"How long have you been working here?"
"Almost 2 years. Well, 2 summers. But I graduated in June, so now's I'm full-time here." She straightened, dabbing her eyes and succeeding in smearing her makeup further. "Got promoted to assistant manager after I graduated."
"Assistant manager? Wow, that's great.
So, you have keys to lock up?" "Yes, ma'am. I work 3 to closing Wednesday through Friday, all day on weekends. I'm in charge then."
"That's a lot of responsibility.
Who's the manager?"
"Mr. Tillsbury. Well, he's the owner. Opens weekday mornings at 11, gets things started for lunch."
"He works alone until you get here at 3?
She shook her head in scorn.
"Mr. T? Nah, he just makes sure the bank deposit adds up and does the ordering. He's usually out of here by 1 at the latest, and he never comes in on Saturday or Sunday."
"So today you opened. Who else was here?"
"Ronnie Clarkson. He only works weekends. He's a lazy something-something. That's why I was the one emptying out the trash in here. That's how come I was the one..."
Her hand covered her mouth, even as she kept on talking, trying to shove the terrible words and images that accompanied them back down inside.
"I was the one who went out there, found that... her... the body..."
Fresh tears started up.
"Is it..."
She gulped and tried again.
"Is it Noreen?"
"Who's Noreen?"
Doris shot a quick glance over her shoulder and leaned forward until they were shoulder to shoulder.
"Don't tell Mr. T, promise? I don't want to get her in no trouble."
"Noreen works here?"
She nodded.
"What's her full name?"
"Noreen Crenshaw. She only works part-time, has a baby to watch out for, usually works 11 to 4 on weekdays."
The woman had been dead more than 24 hours, the M.E. had said. Yesterday. Right around the same time Ashley was last seen.
"Was Noreen here yesterday?"
Another nod.
"Most of the time. She said she had to leave, so I came in early. Place was empty."
"You mean she left it unlocked? No one was here?"
"She locked the register. Not like there's much else to steal except hot dogs. And who'd take the bother to cook them themselves? This time of year, the place is always empty. Mr. T only keeps it going 'cause if he sells it, his wife would make the move to Florida and he don't want to go."
Lucy tried to steer Doris back on track.
"You spoke with Noreen? Was anyone here with her? Any customers?" "Doubt it. She must have been real bored 'cause the place was as clean and spotless as I've ever seen it. Everything scrubbed down and shiny."
"What exactly did she say? When did she call you?" Dora slipped a cell phone from her pocket and flipped it open.
We didn't talk. She texted me.
Damn technology. Didn't people actually talk anymore? Doris tapped a blue enameled nail on the phone keys, then turned the screen around. Gotta go. Sorry. Can't help it. N.
I just figured it had something to do with her baby.
Lucy looked at the timestamp. 2:11 p.m. yesterday. She pulled out the picture of Ashley.
Have you ever seen this girl before? Not in person. But her picture was on the bus pass I found in the trash with the wallet the police took.
She's never been in here? She sucked in her lower lip as she concentrated.
No, ma'am.
Do you have any pictures of Noreen? Doris pushed back her chair and reached behind Lucy to the bulletin board.
Here's one of her and me right after graduation.
Lucy took the photo. Two smiling faces beamed out at her. Noreen's brown hair was pulled back far enough to reveal a sparkling array of earrings dangling from her ear. 5 from the left and 4 from the right.
I need to take this.
Did Noreen have a car? Doris frowned.
Yeah, but it's not here.
What kind of car is it?
Toyota Corolla, blue, hatchback. Real old and pretty rusty.
Lucy didn't think she could get anything else helpful from the manager.
Thanks, Doris. You've been a great help.
She started out the door, then couldn't help herself, and turned back.
You said Noreen had a baby?
Doris nodded, tears seeping from her eyes again.
Jared. He's 4 months old. Looks just like his mommy.
Lucy forced herself not to think of the motherless baby. Instead, imagine Noreen's last moments, begging for her life, for her baby's future, fighting her attacker. Could Ashley have done that to another girl? Did she have the strength? Not just physical strength, but the psychological will it took to dehumanize and kill. She turned to her resident expert and called Nick. She told him what they'd learned so far.
I've heard of teenagers who kill in groups or go on sprees, but what about carefully planned murder? A murder whose only purpose was to cover your tracks?
If it is her, the fact that she chose a target who looked like her but overlooked details like the earrings is definitely indicative of juvenile thinking, he said. As is wiping the place clean, destroying the face and fingerprints but not thinking of DNA and dental records.
Yeah, what's with that?
Lucy asked, tapping her wedding ring against the phone, wishing she could see his face as he spoke. A lot of times, Nick would lay out persuasive arguments both for and against a position, seeing both sides clearly, but she could always tell by his face where his heart really lay.
These days, with CSI catching criminals in 30 seconds flat, you'd think a kid would think of that. It's as if our killer can't really focus for long. He comes up with big ideas but can't implement them fully.
Like a kid with ADHD, Nick suggested. Or an adult.
I don't think it's her, she said flatly.
Okay, his neutral tone, the therapist's tone, which meant he disagreed with her. I'm going with my gut here. Silence. You usually do. You gonna make it home for dinner? No. Even if she could take the time, she wouldn't. Working a case this messy, she felt like she was contaminated. It made her queasy to think of bringing it home with her. Megan doing okay? No more fever. Just moping about maybe missing soccer on Monday.
Give her a kiss and a hug for me.
Megan still let her father touch her, even if she rebuked Lucy's shows of affection. She hesitated. Best to face the music. My meet tomorrow with the Canadians got moved to the morning. I won't make it to Mass with you guys. The fact that he didn't even bother to sigh was a bad sign, as if he knew all along she wouldn't be there with her family. I'll tell her. Guilt stabbed through her. Not only at missing time with her family, but at making Nick play the bearer of bad news. Again. She stroked the phone, wishing it was his face. Or Megan's.
What else could she do? Love ya.
She hung up and returned outside where Burroughs, Dunmar, and several other law enforcement officers were overseeing the M.E.'s removal of the container. From a distance, of course.
"This is your victim."
She handed Noreen's photo to Dunmar and told him about the missing car. She worked here and went missing between 2 and 3 p.m. yesterday. Dunmar arched an eyebrow at her as if she were a particularly bright pupil who had surprised him.
"That's so. Damn shame there's no security cameras or any other way we could track the vehicle from here. But I'll get my boys and the stadies working on any traffic cams, see if we can get a bearing on which way it went."
It was a long shot, but worth a try. She looked out past the tasty treat at the traffic zooming by, bumper to bumper on Route 22. A very long shot. "I think we should try to cover any possible dumping grounds within a 5 to 10 minute radius. He wouldn't have wanted to leave his vehicle here for long while he dumped Noreen's." Burroughs cleared his throat at that.
"He? Who's to say Ashley didn't kill that girl and steal her vehicle?"
"We need to cover every angle," Lucy argued. "If Ashley was taken from here, then it's a whole new ballgame. We should see if we can find anyone who was here yesterday, maybe saw Ashley or anyone else."
"If there was anyone else."
Lucy hated to admit it, but she was starting to wonder herself. This whole case was screwier than the snake handler she dealt with this morning. And she'd thought they rang the bell on the wacky meter. She looked back at the forlorn tasty treat.
"Ashley, what the hell have you gotten yourself into?" Ashley couldn't tell if she'd been there for hours or days. The complete absence of light and outside sound made her too anxious to venture away from her pole. She clung to her pole, at the bottom of a dark pit, close to the molten lava that formed the Earth's core, hot and dark and empty, like the sixth level of Hell and Shadow World. That had been the hardest level to beat. It was where she'd lost Draco, her friend, her ally, her love, just like she'd lost Bobby. Or had Bobby lost her? Was he dead already, or sitting in his own hell worried about her? At first she called for help, until her voice died. Then she tried to think of ways to escape, hard to consider when engulfed in all-consuming blackness. Eventually, she found herself treating her leash as a crutch, like a rope a blind woman would use, keeping her from falling, or worse. She gave up on walking. Even after drinking, she was too dizzy when she stood. Better to keep her body pressed against the solid ground, anchored, secure. One hand wrapped around her pole for security. When she grew thirsty again, she tried to ignore it, but the heat sucked the moisture from her. The more she ignored her thirst, the way her tongue felt swollen, her teeth aching from being so dry, the worse it got. The thought of venturing back out into the darkness made her stomach rise up in rebellion. She would have puked if she had any spit to swallow. She needed water, or she would die. Reluctantly, she let loose of her pole and crawled into the direction where the bucket and commode sat on her left. It was gone. Panicked, she flailed out, lying flat on her belly, kicking and moving her arms as if swimming over the vinyl floor, inching along, guided by her tether. Her thirst escalated with her terror. Without water, she would die. She found herself gulping, swallowing air, her tongue so parched it filled her mouth like a dead dish rag. As dead as she'd be if she didn't find the water. Dead, bloated, rotting, stinking dead. 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 Terror blinded her more than the lack of light. She tried to scream, to wail, to cry for help, but couldn't force any sound other than a weak whelp. Her entire body rattled with pain and fear. Had someone moved the water? Taken it away? Was someone there with her? Watching her? Invisible? Silent? After what felt like hours of searching, thrashing, crawling, her body pressed against the floor, the only thing telling her which direction was up, she surrendered. Sprawled on the floor like a drunk in the gutter,
her fingers and toes and face numb, heartbeat thundering in her head, eyes blinking, unseeing but still able to squeeze out a few tears. "Move, damn it, move." The sound of her voice was better than the sound of her frantic sobbing. She lay frozen, except for her chest heaving, breathing so hard and fast. She was dizzy, as if falling, and there was no bottom. Nothing except another level of hell, she thought with an absurd giggle. This wasn't Shadow World. This was no game. I can't do this. I'm going to die. She knew she should be thinking of all the good times, of her parents, of her friends, but her mind was a total blank. What good times? She had a faint memory of a little girl being pushed on a swing, but it didn't feel like it had happened to her. It felt like something she'd seen once in a movie, or a Hallmark commercial. And her parents? They probably hadn't noticed she was gone. Maybe they were even happy, relieved they wouldn't have to bother with her anymore. Friends? There was only Bobby. That thought brought her fresh tears. What if the man had caught Bobby, killed Bobby, because of her? He didn't deserve that. He'd only been trying to help her. God, if he was dead, it was all her fault. And the worst thing was, she'd never even had the chance to finally meet him in person, to tell him how she felt about him. The pattern from the linoleum imprinted itself on her face as she lay there, weeping tears so thick with salt they scratched her eyes and refused to fall. She wasn't stupid. She knew what the man was going to do to her. She'd heard the stories, seen the movies. Raped and tortured and beaten and killed. That's how they all ended. There were never any happy endings. Never. Ashley squeezed her eyes so tight it made her head hurt. No, she wasn't going to think about that. She was going to get control and get the hell out of there. Focus. She started with simple things. Breathing. Slow. Deep. Steady. She sat there for several minutes, concentrating on her breathing, her mind still reeling from her panic attack. No more. She was in control. Just like Vixen, her character in Shadow World. That thought brought a laugh. Shadow World, a land of darkness where characters fought overwhelming odds to survive. She'd won, beaten everyone. Well, not her, but her character, Vixen, had. Vixen was at home in darkness. Darkness was her friend. Too bad Vixen wasn't here instead of Ashley. Her heart still fluttered with fear, but the pounding in her head vanished. Soon, she could feel her hands and feet again. Good. Now keep moving. Find the water. You need the water to survive. This time, it wasn't her voice, but Vixen's giving her direction, giving her strength. She started crawling once more, slower, her hands searching the floor before her. The darkness was so complete that it felt as if her hands weren't part of her. Disconnected. How well she knew that feeling. It had gotten her through a lot of hard times. Harder times yet to come, the voice behind her eyes whispered. She froze, lay there on the dirty floor, sweltering in the stench of death, divided between the here and the gone. It would be so very easy to let go. Go away. Maybe forever this time. No, not until she found the water. She wasn't going to give the bastard the satisfaction of surrendering so quickly. She had to stay alive. She would. Her hand flailed out, searching for the bucket. Hit it too hard, too fast, sent it rolling over onto its side. Warm water spread out along the floor. Her palm slipped sliding through as she yanked the bucket. Tilted it upright. Had she saved enough? She lowered her hand into the depths of the 5-gallon bucket, found a scant inch remaining at the bottom. splashed the water as if that could magically multiply it, brought her hand, dripping, out of the bucket, and squeezed the water and sweat into her mouth. Her shirt was soaking wet, clammy with the heat, stinking of sweat and fear. She took it off, desperately wrung it out over the bucket, lowered her hand again, measuring the water with her finger, just shy of her first knuckle. Shit! She swallowed. Her mouth was dry. The air was too heavy to breathe. She was going to drown in it even as she died from dehydration. Heat stroke. It drove people crazy. She'd seen a video in health class on it. Things had just gotten a hell of a lot worse. She rolled over onto her back. The view was the same as when she was on her belly, unremitting blackness swallowing her whole. Lay her head back, kept her eyes open, looking for what? She didn't know. Bottom line, she was going to die. Not even Vixen could save her this time.